Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Celebrating 8 years is radio's small business superhero. He's a syndicated radio host, syndicated columnist, author of 2 books, and all-around nice guy.
The most fantastic crime fighter the world has ever known.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks very much for joining me. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. If you've been listening already, you know that makes you a really smart person. You're quickly identified as one of the smartest people in the world. And if you continue to listen, those of you who just tuned in, look what you've got to look forward to. Steve Del Bianco is our guest. He's a really smart guy, too. He's vice president of the Association for Competitive Technology. And even though Jonathan Zook is the president, we know Steve really runs the shop over there. He's our good friend. Steve, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thank you, Jim. Great to be here.
It's good to have you here. As always, good to have you back. You're always welcome on the show, and you always bring us some good things to think about that we hadn't thought about before. And one of the things I think you've got on your mind today is identity theft. And you know, more and more every day, everybody listening, if it hasn't happened to them, identity theft, they know somebody. More and more every day, we meet people or we know somebody who it has happened to.
That's right, Jim. And when it happens to you, you know it, because it can take 600 or 700 hours on average to repair
Wow.
the damage, and might take years actually to clear your name and clear your credit records.
How do people steal our identity?
Crime in America. And you know, I just wanted to tell you a little story that really tends to talk about where this comes from. Just 2 weeks ago, a lot of Hurricane Katrina victims were standing in line at a social services center just outside of New Orleans, and they were standing mm-hmm. in line to come in and register for some relief. Well, there were some well-dressed people who were working the lines. They were walking up and down the lines with a clipboard.
Oh, no.
And they would ask the people, you know what's coming, don't you?
Oh,
they would
no.
ask these people, listen, I can help you when you get up to the desk there. I'll take all your information, so we'll have your application ready for you when you get to the table. They would take what? IDs?
Right.
Like social security numbers, full name,
driver's
prior
license.
Address, prior addresses. And when these people got to the front of the line and said, well, I pre-filed, nobody knew what they were talking about.
Mm.
So sure enough, these folks working the line were ID thieves. But all they did
wow.
was collect enough information to be able to go out and open up credit card accounts in the name of these people so they could rack up a couple of $1,000s and make off with it. So I just want to make the point that criminals are actively seeking ways to get your personal information. If they can get enough of a credit card number, they'll rack up charges on your card. If they have enough information from you, Jim, they'll open an account in your name and mm-hmm. run up debts in your name. Now, you may
with your
you may
Social Security number associated
debt.
With your Social Security number and everything, whenever the credit report comes through, is completely fully attributed to you.
It will be, and it's
yeah.
going to take years to clear your name. But worse still, you can't qualify for, say, a new credit or mm-hmm. for an insurance policy. You might
right.
even be rejected when you apply for a new job because they do credit checks.
Mm-hmm.
Or worst case ever, you're on the road and you get pulled over by a policeman who takes you to custody because as soon as he pulls your records, he sees that you're wanted in 4 states for credit card problems.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the fastest growing crime in America. When it hits you, it hits like a ton of bricks. So,
well, this thing with the people standing in line, I mean, that's pretty blatant, but most identity theft is a lot more subtle than that, isn't it?
It is. My grandmother, for instance, 2 months ago, my grandmother got that phone call from the bank representative who wants to verify your account information. And
mm-hmm.
she gave it up.
Oh,
gave
no.
Gave it up, and they raided
oh,
her
no.
account. Well, the bank gave it back, and months later, she feels chagrined about it, but at least in her case, the bank was able to recover the funds.
Well, and so many folks like that, they're not wise to the sinister ways of the world, and they believe people when they call them. I mean, the older people are really preyed on by these folks, aren't they?
I'm
these
afraid
criminals.
So. And so, Jim, this we've highlighted so far the ways where an individual actually gives up the information voluntarily, and the vast majority of ID theft occurs because of that. Because somebody telephoned you,
mm-hmm.
somebody solicited you, somebody got you to give it up. And lately, the Internet has put a new twist on that because these phishing emails that come in that say that...
Boy, they're good ones, too, Steve.
They are.
They're
They've got
so
the logo
good.
Of the bank, and it says, you know, click here, please verify your account information. So that's just the latest twist on an old scam. It wasn't invented with the internet, and it isn't even the most prevalent source of it.
Yeah, it's amazing what some of these things. I mean, some of them are the ones we talked about once time before when you were here was like the beer survey or the chocolate survey or something like that. But when they send you something from eBay or PayPal or a Bank of America or somebody like that, and they've got a real looking email address, they've got the actual all the language and all the logos of these companies. And they're saying, we need to verify your information. It looks pretty compelling. We're going to talk about this and how you can prevent this from happening to you and some of the legislation that Steve is working on to prevent this from happening to you and your small business. 22, I'm Jim Blasingame. We'll be right back with Steve Del Bianco. Mr. Joe Cocker, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, the lonely days are gone. I'll be right home. My baby, I'm Jim Blasingame. Welcome back. And Steve Del Bianco is our guest, and he's a pretty good rocker, too. Steve is vice president with the Association of Competitive Technology, ACT. The website is actonline.org, isn't it, Steve?
That's right, Jim.
I encourage you to check it out, folks, and join this organization. They work really hard to make sure that the policies that are implemented by the government, the federal government, and state governments, maybe even local governments, are not unnecessarily harming not only the developers of technology, but people like you and me who consume technology, who use technology. And Steve, you guys do a good job, and I'm really proud of what you do.
Thanks, Jim. We look to your help, too, because one of the primary business groups that we seek to help is the small business, the small
Absolutely.
IT firms that do consulting and training, software development, and too often their interests are completely ignored by lawmakers at the state and federal level.
Right, and that's one of the things you guys work on. So, folks, I encourage you to check out their website at actonline.org, but also to go there to find out about what's going on out there in the technology public policy arena. All right, Steve, we're talking about identity theft, and we were getting to the point, which is an area that we've talked about a little bit in the past, and this is the phishing thing. These are the emails that we get in that look really legitimate, and the ones that are like the surveys, the chocolate survey, and I got to tell you, I was almost compelled to do that one. That chocolate thing made me. If it had been a cookie survey, I probably would have been dead meat. But I did stop short on the coffee, on the chocolate thing. But anyway, what's the next step?
Well, as you might suspect, whether somebody comes up to you in line and tries to take your information, if they call your grandmother on the phone and ask for her bank account, or send you an email that's designed to fish that information out of you, in all cases, those are attempts to defraud someone. And at the federal and state level, it starts to approach the level of a felony, of a crime. Now, once they get your information and actually defraud you, it's universally held as a felony, and you can get assistance from law enforcement to go after them.
Is that kind of thing on email considered mail fraud? Is email the same thing as mail fraud?
I don't believe that it is. I don't believe that it is.
It ought to be.
Well, that would just be one more count, right, to go after them on.
Mm-hmm.
One of the keys here is to make sure that the attempt to fish you, the attempt to get you to comply with a survey, would be treated just as severely as if they successfully got you to give it up.
Mm-hmm.
And in most states, they'll say that an attempt to commit a felony is treated the same as committing the felony, and that's helpful. But in all cases, it's tough to get law enforcement resources to focus enough on it when there's so much for them to go after. So, if you don't mind, we'll focus on a second, different category of ID theft that arises not when you're phished, not when someone comes up to you in line to ask, but unbeknownst to you, let's suppose, that a handful of criminal employees working at a credit bureau decide to steal a couple of tapes and sneak out of the building and sell them to somebody who wants to do ID theft.
With a couple
or
of million
a tape
names
falls
and
out
names
the back
and
of a... Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, with a couple of them, they slip out with a couple of tapes that just happen to have a couple of million names and IDs in it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or the case of Choice Point, the company out of Atlanta, last year, the famous Choice Point case, where a ring of Nigerian gang members posed as customers of Choice Point.
Oh, no.
And thereby obtained information, credit report information on people, by posing as customers. They paid for the information, and then they used it to open up credit fraud on those folks.
Mm-hmm.
Or let's suppose a backup tape falls out of the back of a UPS truck,
right,
which is what happened to Citibank.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing to do with the internet or technology, but really just carelessness or an unfortunate accident.
Mm-hmm.
In all these cases, we broadly call them security breaches, meaning the data security was breached, whether it's accidental, on purpose, done with a computer or without a computer. Those are cases where if the information on you, your sensitive information, is now potentially in someone else's hands, we've got to say, what are the obligations of those companies to report it so that you can take measures to protect your credit risk?
Mm-hmm.
So we call that the security breach notification bills, and there's 30 of them running around this country. 18 were enacted in law in the last year, and there are 9 such bills pending in Congress right now.
Should we have those kinds of bills in each state, or should they be federal?
Well, you know it well. They need a national solution, because any backup tape falling out of the back of one of Citibank's trucks, guess what? It's got customers in it from every state.
Well, it may fall out of the truck in California and not have a single name from California.
Yeah.
You know, they might be in every other state but California.
And yet, the way these state laws are written, they apply anytime a resident of that state had his information breached.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you hit the nail on the head, Jim. It's an unworkable patchwork. We've got to have a consistent national approach. And Congress is working on it, but Congress doesn't react as quickly as many state legislatures do.
Unless they're passing Sarbanes-Oxley. Sorry, I had to get that in there, but they did that in 90 days. But anyway, that's another story. So what do you recommend? What are you guys working on?
We work hard on trying to make these bills as consistent as we can, but there are a couple of areas where we want to try to protect the interests of a small business. These bills typically have a provision in them. It's a trigger provision. It says that if a breach occurs, and you discover it, of course, you would assess the risk of ID theft. And if there's a risk of ID theft, that the wrong kind of information is lost, you don't even have to know who has it. The fact is that it's been lost. And if it includes things like names and account numbers, well, then there's a risk. This is supposed to encourage companies to not only safeguard their information, but more importantly, to encrypt and redact the information so that even if it were lost or accessed, it isn't capable of being used to perform ID theft. There's already incentives for that, but the idea of these bills is to encourage companies to do a better job of
when
it.
When we come back, you're gonna plug in the small business angle on all this, ladies and gentlemen, right after these messages. Never mind that small business owners have their IDs stolen, their individual IDs stolen. Tim Till will be right back with Steve Del Bianco. He's with the Association for Competitive Technologies. Welcome back. It's 7 Till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Steve Del Bianco is our guest. Steve, you've given us the website for ACT, the Association for Competitive Technology, actonline.org, but you also have another one, NetChoice. Tell us about that.
Jim, NetChoice is a coalition of e-commerce companies plus almost 20,000 e-commerce consumers. And what we try to do is prevent barriers to e-commerce, legacy regulations that would get in the way of, say, buying contact lenses online or looking at online listings of real estate.
Selling wine across the state lines,
exactly,
and things like that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's www.netchoice.org, and membership in there is free. So please,
all right, check that out. I'm a happy member of that organization. Steve, we'll get back to the ID theft issue, especially with regard to small business.
Jim, one of the things we're very concerned about is that when a small business owner, let's say, discover that a nasty employee has been stealing information on his customers, selling it to somebody who's using it potentially for ID theft, well, that creates the obligation, even without a law in place, that ought to create the obligation to notify those customers that they are at risk. Now, what are those customers?
That's a scary thing for us to think about doing, though, isn't it?
It is, and yet it's the right thing to do.
Right,
even
absolutely.
Even scarier is not doing it, and later on having those people be defrauded at a situation where you're going to be financially at risk, your reputation will be in the toilet. So I think the right thing to do is to notify. The problem is, what if you do a good faith effort to notify and you can't reach everyone? Maybe your email addresses have gone out of date, and if all you have is an email address, you're not going to be able to reach them.
Right.
If you work the telephone but you don't reach them, even if telephonic notice is allowed, maybe you don't even have a mailing address, and if you send mail, do you know if they got it?
So let me ask you this question. Is anything beyond, what if it's just all they got were names and email addresses? Are we obligated to, do you think we're obligated to notify them about that? Just email addresses?
Each of these laws is written differently, but I would suggest to you that a name and an email address, it does not constitute a risk of identity theft and fraud.
Right.
They're not going to open a credit card account with that information.
Exactly.
Right.
And but if you're a restaurant or something like that, and you have, sometimes I do business with people, I call them up or whatever, and they say, well, you want to use the same credit card you had last time, and I'll say sure, and they've already got my information, and it's
a small
business.
And that small business, then, if that information were lost, stolen, they've got an obligation to let you know. And then your job is to watch your credit cards for unauthorized charges. You might even have a credit monitoring service set up so that you can take the measures to protect your credit risk.
Mm-hmm. Now, who else should we notify besides the individual whose information has been breached?
Jim, you ought to notify the credit bureaus, Experian, Equifax,
right.
The credit bureaus themselves will be helpful.
Well, should we tell them should we give them the names of who the people are who were lost?
They'll probably want to know the name of your business. So if they get calls from folks asking about their credit record, they can suggest that Blazing Games business lost my information, and they can track that for you. But
what about authorities? Like, should we contact the police or the district attorney or anybody like that?
I don't think that'll be productive if it's a small business situation, because at this point we have no idea who's got the information that was leaked.
Or whether anything is actually going to happen from that. A crime has been committed, but it's been committed against you, not against your customers.
And that depends, Jim. If you've just simply lost it, it's going to be hard to assert that there was a crime. But
if you've got
an employee who's been stealing information and selling it, be sure you go to the police on day one.
Right. But if you don't know who it is, you're saying contact the individuals who are affected, your customers who are affected. Get that out right away. You know, we saw that in recently. I guess it was in August. There were some major credit card breaches. There were three or four different companies that were affected. One company got their information out really early, and the others were late getting their information out.
That's right. And the vendor who lost that information lost their contract with Visa and American Express.
Yeah.
The penalties to a company that is careless with information are severe. Loss of reputation, loss of business, it could even cost you the entire business.
So the big story is, if you have customer information, protect it virtually with your life.
That's right. And what I'm working on in state legislatures, Jim, is the penalty provision. Some of these states have suggested that if you have a breach and you fail to notify someone, that is a violation.
Wow.
I think that's to be expected.
Mm-hmm.
But the devil's in the details. If some states have a $1,000 per violation penalty because you didn't notify, the question is, well, what happens? If you've got 10,000 customers you couldn't notify, that's $10 million.
That's right. What about jail time? Is it possible you could go to jail for something like that?
Today, no.
Right.
Today, no. But I'll tell you what, $10 million could bankrupt a small company. That's as bad as going to jail.
That would probably, I'm not going to have to check my account, but I think that would put me under two, Steve. Hey, thanks for being here. Good job today.
Thank you, Jim.
As always, Steve DelBianco, ladies and gentlemen. ACT is the Association for Competitive Technologies. That's actonline.org. I encourage you to go there. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.